Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC as we continue with Mark Halperin, co-author of The Way to Win, a book about the 2008 presidential campaign and the likely candidates. He's also ABC News political analyst. And all right, Mark, next topic, Chuck Hagel, maverick Republican senator, vehemently against the war, presumably preparing to run for president. He had a big announcement the other week to announce that he's not announcing, but that he may still run. He tells Esquire that President Bush could potentially face impeachment if he continues to thwart the public will on Iraq, and he explained why yesterday in this clip from ABC This Week.
Well, any president who says, I don't care, or I will not respond to what the people of this country are saying about Iraq or anything else, or I don't care what the Congress does, I am going to proceed. If a president really believes that, then there are, what I was pointing out, there are ways to deal with that.
And you think that would be appropriate in this case?
This is not a monarchy, as George Stephanopoulos began to talk over him. Why is Chuck Hagel talking about impeachment?
Well, Chuck Hagel does speak his mind. Look, if this nomination decision for the Republican Party for who was going to be president was being voted on by the media or by Republicans who are opposed to the war, I think Hagel would probably get in this race, and he'd probably do very well. He does know, however, that that's not the people. Those are not the groups who determine this nominee. And I think that his decision not to decide was based on the reality that it would be very difficult for him to enter this race and compete on the traditional way the nomination is determined. He has never been reluctant to criticize the president or his party on a range of issues, although he does have a very Republican and pro-Bush voting record, and that is part of the reason why he is so popular with the media, which tends to like Republicans who criticize Republican presidents.
Well, he is a U.S. senator talking about impeachment. How popular is President Bush at this point with the Republican voting base?
Still quite popular, particularly compared, of course, to his overall popularity, but he has dropped substantially at a time, as we write about in The Way to Win. One of his greatest political achievements in his first 5 years in national life was the extraordinary consolidation of support amongst Republicans, above 90%, that fueled all of his political victories, 2000, his party's wins in the midterms in 2002, and his reelection in 2004. He has dropped now down to around 70%, which is still quite high,
yeah.
But it is not high enough to sustain a popularity overall, and of course that's contributed mightily, that drop amongst Republicans and independents who lean towards the Republicans, that has contributed to his weakness in Washington and around the world.
But still, if Hagel, from his perspective, is talking about potentially impeaching this still popular with the base Republican president, and he's considering running for the Republican nomination, how does he put those two things together?
Well, it's difficult, and even being against the war and opposed to the president's policy of injecting more troops, inserting more troops into Iraq, is not a popular position within the Republican Party, particularly those people who participate in the early caucuses and primaries. Now, he floated the notion of impeachment. He's not advocating it, and when George Stephanopoulos asked him about it, he got awfully cautious and backed off. But he is a rarity in Washington now, which is he is willing to speak out quite openly, although some would argue, some people who are close observers of Senator Hagel would argue, that these are not positions that he takes and fights for in a principled way, but occasionally just kind of floats things out there in an idiosyncratic way.
And we do have to give credit to the House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, for getting her war bill passed on Friday afternoon. On Friday morning on the show, we talked with Arianna Huffington and Paul Begala from the Democratic side, how the Dems were all over the place with the peace wing and revolt over this war funding bill, because it does throw a lot of money at the war for now, even though it has a September 08 deadline for bringing troops home. But later that day, Speaker Pelosi did manage to hold Maxine Waters and other peace wing leaders who had been opposing the bill. How did she do it?
Brian, I give her all the credit in the world, along with her deputies and lieutenants. She achieved two things. One, from just a pure political point of view, she proved her competence and her vote-counting ability, getting to that 218, a very difficult thing to do. There's always a bit of a perils of Pauline aspect to the political coverage before somebody wins a vote, before a vote is successfully carried. People say it's always so dark, but she was able to get it through, and that showed competence and strategy that I think not everyone thought she had. The other thing is, for those in the country who want to end the war, and this was one of Nancy Pelosi's best talking points, this was the right vote. It doesn't end the war. This is not a bill the president will sign, we already know. It's not necessarily even a bill that the president, that the Republicans or Democrats in the House and Senate can get together on and send to the president's desk. But Nancy Pelosi knows that as long as George Bush wants to continue the war, he probably can, and she's trying to bring maximum political pressure on him by arguing to Democrats, including the Netroots, so-called the bloggers and others on the web, many of whom who did support this, even though it's not exactly what they wanted. She convinced liberals that this was the best rational step to get their eventual goal of trying to put pressure on the president. A really impressive political and substantive achievement from Nancy Pelosi.
So what happens now in the Senate? And if they don't have enough votes in either house, even if this passes some kind of, you know, unified measure in both houses of Congress, if they don't have enough to override, how does this effectively put pressure on the president?
Well, look, Brian, this is, legislative process is complicated, and you and I could get down in the weeds and talk about it for the rest of the program. But I'll just say in brief, this involves the budget, and so there is going to have to be something. There's going to be a little bit of a game of chicken. Democrats, assuming they can get something to the president, are going to argue, Mr. President, if you don't want the funding to run out, sign our bill. The president's going to say, this bill is unacceptable. If you don't want the funding to run out, send me an acceptable bill. I'm not sure who will win that game of public relations and for the hearts and minds of the American people. The way that, that this, regardless of the outcome of that fight, puts pressure on the president is it shows a voice of a majority, even though it's almost all almost all Democrats, saying the troops should come home by a specific deadline, that the president's policy should not go on indefinitely. That incrementalism is the only option right now that the Democrats have. They can cry and curse the darkness, or they can light a series of candles that they hope eventually, if Republicans start to feel that the president's policy isn't working, might join in on, and that eventually may lead to pressuring the president. It's a long, painful process for the Democrats, but it's the best they have available to them.
You said a very important thing there that a lot of people might not yet realize. If the president vetoes the bill, then he is vetoing funding to continue the war.
And all sorts of other things.
So in order to get the funding to continue the war, he's got to do presumably some kind of negotiation with the Congress over the terms of that funding.
Well, there's no question. I mean, I think, again, we can't get too far ahead in gaming this out because we have to see what the Senate does, where, of course, the barrier to passing something is higher. Democrats need 60 votes in the Senate to get anything done, even though they have a bare majority. And something will get to the president's desk. But again, if it's anything that's like the House bill with the kind of deadline that the House would want for withdrawal of troops, even with some caveats, the president will veto that. And it's very similar to the situation, Brian, we saw back in the 90s when President Clinton had a face-off with the Republican-controlled Congress over shutting down the government. President Clinton was able to win that fight. But that fight about who's at fault, is it the fault of the Congress for sending a bill to the president that's unacceptable? Is it the fault of the president for vetoing it? That public relations war is going to be decisive, again, as a matter of both of politics and of substance.
And I guess as a matter of politics, the risk for the Democrats is that, well, most of them have been reluctant to look like they're not willing to support the troops with funding. And so if there's this standoff and they won't approve the funding because the president won't accept their terms, well, the president, you know, has his own risks because the war is unpopular. But then the Democratic majority may risk losing the support of people because they are seen as not giving the troops what they need to survive.
That is framed exactly correct. And again, that shows why it's hard to say who would win that face-off. Both sides have opportunities. Both sides will face public relations peril. Of course, traditionally, Republicans have won those kind of national security face-offs because voters tend to see them as the stronger party on those issues, to trust them more. But the president and his party have lost standing on national security with much of the public, largely because of the Iraq war and questions about competence. And that means that Democrats have an opportunity to win a national security face-off, but certainly they have to be a little bit worried that voters will return to their traditional view of the two parties and side with the White House on that face-off.
And certainly, though, we should acknowledge that the peace wing of the party, Dennis Kucinich, Maxine Waters, Gerald Nadler, and others say, no, 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 the polls show that American people overwhelmingly want the troops to come home, and so they argue there isn't that much political risk in refusing to defund the war. But we'll see what happens with that. Mark Halperin, my guest from ABC News, he's a political analyst there and co-author of the book, The Way to Win. We're also going to have a second guest join us in a few minutes to talk about immigration as an issue in the Republican primaries. There seems to be some changing turf there. But I want to touch one other thing, because also late on Friday, the government did one of those famous weekend document drops to bury damaging information, assuming that people don't read their Saturday, those thin little Saturday newspapers we get, this time about Alberto Gonzalez. And here is what Gonzalez had been saying about his involvement in the firing of eight U.S. attorneys.
Like every CEO, I am ultimately accountable and responsible for what happens within the department. But that is, in essence, what I knew about the process. Was not involved in seeing any memos, was not involved in any discussions about what was going on. I never saw documents. We never had a discussion about where things stood.
We never had a discussion about where things stood. How did this document drop contradict that, Mark?
Well, it said quite explicitly that there was quite a long meeting shortly before the decision was made to get rid of to sack, as we say, I like that verb, the U.S. attorneys involving General Gonzalez, Attorney General Gonzalez, and that is not the first indication in these emails that have been released that he was involved more than his rhetoric would suggest. But a meeting of an hour scheduled for an hour with the key decision makers in this to talk through the process really does belie for many Democrats, and I think even for some Republicans, and certainly for many journalists, the Attorney General's pretty clear suggestions that he was peripherally involved with this, that he hadn't really had a hands-on role in any way. Now, the White House and the Justice Department say there's no contradiction. I think the reason you saw a number of Republicans on the Sunday shows yesterday, including Senator Hagel, expressing probably, I would say, one or two notches stepped up criticism and skepticism about the Attorney General was because they have trouble squaring his rhetoric about the level of his involvement with the email released, as you said, late Friday and the document dump.
And here is one of those Republicans, Senator Arlen Specter, on NBC's Meet the Press.
We have to have an Attorney General who is candid, truthful. And if we find he has not been candid and truthful, that's a very compelling reason for him not to stay on.
What happens next on this, Mark?
Well, it's really hard to say. You know, it appeared last week that there was a fever pitch to get the Attorney General to step down. And although a handful of Republicans, including some senators, called for his resignation, there was not a stampede. I think what the Republican senators are now doing is saying, if the Attorney General can come up here when he testifies in the next month or so and explain all this with credibility, then we won't call for his resignation. But I think they don't anticipate that happening. On Thursday, we're supposed to hear from the Attorney General's former chief of staff, Kyle Sampson. That will probably not produce testimony that will make the story tamp down. It will probably ratchet it up. And I think the White House believes that the Attorney General will have a tough time keeping his job, but they would rather him not have to resign in the heat of the story from a couple weeks ago and hope that the story becomes a little bit less white-hot and that he could leave under those terms, or perhaps they're still hoping that he could turn things around. But I don't think you could find too many people taking your bet, either on Capitol Hill or in the White House, to say that Gonzalez will survive over the next 2 months. But it will be a question of, are there more documents? When does he testify? Can he restore the confidence of the country and the American people? And while we're always happy to talk about the politics, I think the substance is what's bothering the Republicans. It's not that they're worried that he's politically damaging. What they're worried about is that there needs to be confidence in a bipartisan way and in a nonpartisan way in the operation of the U.S. attorney's offices around the country, and this has undermined that.
This is 93.9 and AM 820 WNYC and WNYC.org. Brian Lehrer with you this morning. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we will look at a new United Nations convention meant to protect the rights of the disabled around the world. They don't have things like the Americans with Disabilities Act in most countries. We'll look at a new UN convention that seeks to impose that kind of thing. But we will turn now to the issue of illegal immigration in the Republican presidential race. Senator John McCain said after an Iowa campaign appearance that he may rethink his support for a path to citizenship for illegal immigrants. Senator Sam Brownback was also taken aback at the Iowa event last week by the parade of questions from the audience about the issue. But how defining is it in Republican politics this year? ABC News analyst Mark Halpern is still here. And also with us now is Tamar Jacoby, senior fellow with Manhattan Institute. She is a conservative who supports a comprehensive immigration reform package, including a path to citizenship, such as McCain has advocated. Tamar, welcome back to WNYC.
It's great to be here, Brian.
That Iowa event got written up in a lot of media. Do you know what exactly happened there?
I don't. I've been out of the country for a couple of days, so I'm going to plead ignorance about that event. But my understanding about where McCain is that he's we're talking about the exact details of what will happen to the 12 million illegal immigrants already here. What will be the hoops that they have to jump through to get onto a path toward legality? The comment I've seen from Senator McCain is that he would consider something like the proposal that Representative Pence put forward last year, which would require them to leave the country and re-enter in order to get on a path to citizenship. So I'm not sure he's changing his support for a path to citizenship. I think he may be considering, are we asking enough in terms of conditions? But I don't know if you noticed the bill that was introduced in the House last week by allies of Senator McCain's, in fact, has a provision like that that asks people to leave the country and re-enter in order to get on a path to citizenship. So, you know, we can talk about whether or not that's a good plan, but I don't think we're talking about absolute black or white support or not. We're talking about negotiating over the conditions so that we can get a robust bipartisan majority behind this bill.
So, Mark Halperin, let me go right back to you as someone who's closely following the political candidates. A lot of ink was spilled over John McCain saying that thing about reconsidering his position after Iowa. Is he changing his position?
I think there's no mistaking that he is, and I think he's doing it under pressure from Mitt Romney, who, while in the past has been rhetorically seemingly a supporter of the kind of Bush, McCain, Kennedy style of immigration reform, has moved now to the right, which is clearly where the energy and passion is in the Republican Party. And I think Senator McCain is feeling the heat of that. I think I don't want to impute motives to him, but it certainly seems to me to be no coincidence that as Governor Romney has stepped up his rhetoric to the right of Senator McCain, Senator McCain seems to have softened his support, although he is still working for a bill, and he is still working for a bill that would be much more in line with what the president's talking about than where the balance of opinion is within the Republican Party, at least in Washington.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about where the balance of opinion is. You know, poll after poll shows that the people who are standing there with their arms across their chest saying, no way, build a wall, send them home, they represent about 20 to 25% of voters. And I'm not talking about polls done by immigrant advocate groups. I'm talking about every major media organization has found that between two-thirds and three-quarters of the public are willing to say, okay, we're not going to send those 12 million people who are already here home. We do have to find some way for our sake for them to come in out of the shadows. And if they're going to jump through certain hoops, and, you know, again, we can talk about the hoops. Does that have to include going home or not? We're for a reform. So, you know, sure, in a primary, 20% of the vote makes a big difference, but it's only 20% of the vote. They make a lot of noise. They scream up and down. Lou Dobbs speaks for them. They don't represent most voters. And, you know, immigration is proved again and again in the past to be the fool's gold of electoral politics. Politicians hear those 20% of voters, and they say, well, if I only keep them happy, I can ride it to the White House or to the Senate or whatever it is. Well, you know, Pat Buchanan got 1% of the vote. Tom Tancredo is not the senator from Colorado, which he'd hoped to be, but decided not even to run when he seriously looked into whether he could make that.
Tom Tancredo, the leading anti-illegal immigrant advocate activist in the House.
Sure, it can skew the politics in the short term.
Yes.
Brian, can I respond?
Mark, yeah, fool's gold of politics?
You know, you're absolutely right. On a straight reading of the polling data, you're absolutely right. And I think you're absolutely right about the characterization of fool's gold. And certainly if you look at the last two men who have won the presidency, George Bush and Bill Clinton, they have had immigration ideas very much in line with what you're talking about and what Senator McCain has supported. I think the reality is, though, if you go out with Republican presidential candidates, if you talk to Republicans who ran for re-election and election in the last midterms and were up for election in 2008, they feel, whether they're wrong or right, that the energy within the party, the threat from within the party, comes from those who have immigration views much more in line with Tom Tancredo than John McCain. They may be wrong, but I can assure you that's what they're hearing out on the campaign trail, and I can assure you that it influences their thinking about where this issue lies and what where the safe side is to be. As a matter of reality, I'll just say one more thing quickly. The Democrats are not going to join hands with George Bush to give him a big victory on much of anything, I don't believe, because of bitterness over Iraq. Immigration is a very tough issue, as you know well. To get this done as a matter of reality this year, it's going to require 70 House members, I think, or more, for the Democrats to agree to make a deal, and I don't think they're going to get anywhere near that.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, a couple things. I mean, I live out there feeling that heat. You're absolutely right, you know, that you hear that 20%. They make a lot of noise and they generate a lot of energy. That said, it didn't work for Republicans in 2006. You know, they bet on that fool's gold. They said if we don't pass a bill, if we sound tough, if we vote for a fence, if we vote to make them all felons, that'll work for us and people will reelect us. And what happened was the two leading proponents in the Congress of that ugly, tough stance lost, and one of the angriest proponents of it, who was outside of the Congress candidate, who ran on exclusively, also lost. And you know,
you've chosen selectively.
I think what the public wants is a solution, and I think it's Latinos want a solution, businessmen who can't bid on the next job without more workers want a solution, and ordinary soccer mom voters have come to equate this with, can they govern? Can they get over that bipartisan nonsense and actually come to an agreement and solve something? And I think that both parties, the smart people in both parties, see that delivering is going to pay off more than a political football. I mean, sure, there are people in both parties who just want to, you know, Democrats who want to watch Romney and whoever it is scratch each other's eyes out, and Republicans who can already imagine the ads that say Democrats are the amnesty party. But I think the smart people in both parties want to solve it. Republicans want to get it off the table, and Democrats want to deliver and show that they can produce real law and can govern. So, you know, I think it's the contest in the next 6 months is going to be between those football people, you know, rather have a political football, and the people who want to solve something. And, you know, I'm betting on the better angels. I agree with you, it'll be hard, but I think there's an enormous political will to see it solved, and that there's a chance that Congress will respond to
Tomorrow, on this alternative measure that would require illegal immigrants to go to their home countries before returning here to get on the path to citizenship, I was reading an anti-illegal immigrant blog over the weekend, and they were poo-pooing that. They were saying, no, this is a fig leaf. This is a fake bill, you know, designed by Mike Pence to look tough, but really all it does is make them go out of the country for 5 minutes, and then they can come back and do the same thing that McCain was offering them in the first place. Do you disagree?
Well, you get a range of opinion. I mean, the reason it's in the bill is that there was a hope that there are a lot of Republicans in Congress who say, you know, it can't be amnesty. And when you say, well, what if they go home, they like it. They feel that if they start from a position of legality, if the first thing they do in the country is legal, is come in legally, that kind of reboots the computer, that changes that rule of law calculus.
But they're only coming back in legally because they were here previously illegally.
Well, and it turns out the public, I mean, it was very interesting. We did some focus groups on this in the last couple of weeks, and we're about to do a poll. The public doesn't really buy it. The public we did focus groups including conservative Republicans in Farmers Branch, which is one of those towns in Texas where they've had the most polarizing debate about this. Even conservative Republicans in Farmers Branch said, you know, if we're going to let them in, if we're going to let them stay, let them stay. If we're going to make them go home, make them go home, but why would you send them out for 2 weeks in order to come back in? So I think it may happen that the public may be way ahead of the legislators on this. There are a lot of legislators who think this is a clever idea and that it's sort of a soundbite that works. I think the public may be have a little more common sense and see that it doesn't make that much sense. I don't think it was a mistake to introduce it in the bill because I think the key here is, as Mark Halperin said, is going to be getting those Republicans in the House to go for it, enough of them. And if this at least makes them say, well, gee, I can consider this and think about it, and then the public says, well, gee, it's really silly, why don't you drop it out? You know, that might be the way to get the zigzag course that it takes to get to yes here.
We're almost out of time, but hey, Mark, what's Rudy Giuliani's illegal immigration position?
Well, it's a little bit fuzzy, like his position on most things. He's a big hero at the Manhattan Institute, so I'll tread lightly here, but I think that his position is historically has been more like the Bush, Kennedy, McCain position, but that he himself recognizes where the energy is in the party, and he's not been very specific as late as this has become a hotter issue. But he's probably, historically, he's certainly closer to the president's position in the Manhattan Institute position than he is to the emerging Romney position or the Tancredo position.
Agree
well, you know,
that.
One word on that. I mean, I think he's ideally placed to be somebody who makes the case that immigration is good for the country. I mean, you know, child of immigrant family, you know, has long supported it, knows it's good for knew it was good for the New York economy. But also, you know, it's hard to argue with his law enforcement and security credentials. And so, you know, if the case for comprehensive immigration reform is that we can have the immigration and the legality, too, if we regulate it better, I think he's in a perfect position to make that case. So, you know, let's see if he if he's willing to stand on those law enforcement and security credentials and make the bold case for a tough reform that will deliver control. You know, that's what I'd like to see him do.
Now, before you go, Mark Halperin, our news director just rushed in here with today's Daily News. I don't know if you know that you're in the Daily News today in Russian Beloy. Now, I have to admit,
isn't this a classier program than reading the gossip?
I have to admit, I looked past Russian Malloy today for, you know, some of the other parts of the Daily News.
An empty suit, Brian, being guided by your producers towards whatever they.
This is direct from our news director, who's way on top of Russian Malloy. And so, right under Jacko looks for a jackpot in Vegas with 50-foot robot.
I question their judgment, leading with that over me. But
over you, it says, and people will remember your book is called The Way to Win. It says Teresa Hines Carey isn't too happy that author Mark Halperin calls her husband John Kerry's presidential campaign the way to lose in his new book. You want to bash back here?
No, I don't. I think the item speaks for itself, as we say. You know, the Way to Win is a book based on talking to Karl Rove and Bill Clinton and other top political strategists. We looked at the Kerry campaign, and we couldn't find too many people who defended them as a model for how to win presidential elections, and Mrs. Hines is Carrie is certainly entitled to her opinion about whether she thinks they are a model for how to win elections.
All right. Get me page 6. Mark Halperin, ABC News political analyst, author of The Way to Win, Taking the White House in 2008. Tamar Jacoby, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. Thank you both very much.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, the UN seeks to create rights for the disabled globally. And you'll never guess which country isn't going to sign. Stay tuned.